Bhagavadam Itiyasa Srashina Prithya Mahakuta Rajan Prichite Datta Satrave Atraivo Dharita Purvam Itiyasa Srashina Prithya Mahakuta Rajan Prichite Datta Satrave Katra, in this connection, Eva, certainly, Udarita was recited, Purvam, previously, Itihasa, an old story, Surarishina, by the great sage Narada, Prithya, with joy. Mahakrato, at the great Rajasuya sacrifice. Rajan, O King, Prichate, to the inquiring. Adatta Satave, Maharaj Yudhisthira, who had no enemy. Translation. Formerly, O King, when Maharaj Yudhisthira was performing the Rajasuya sacrifice, the great sage Narada, responding to his inquiry, recited historical facts showing how the Supreme Personality of Godhead is always impartial, even when killing demons. In this regard, he gave a vivid example. Put forth by His Divine Grace, Sri Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. This example, this relates to how the Lord exhibited His impartiality even when killing Shishupal in the arena of the Rajasuya Yajna performed by Maharaj Yudhisthira. Translation, please repeat. Formerly, O King, when Maharaj Yudhisthira was performing the Rajasuya sacrifice, the great sage Narada, responding to his inquiry, recited historical facts showing how the Supreme Personality of Godhead is always impartial, even when killing demons. In this regard, he gave a vivid example. Om Aganatara Mandasya Gnanjana Sarakaya Sakshirul Mahitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. In this chapter, regarding the apparent contradictions in the Supreme Lord's being equal to everyone, is citing various examples through the history of the world, examples of demons, beginning with Shishupal. And through the Lord's dealings with these demons, showing how He is actually impartial. The Lord states in Bhagavad Gita, Samoham Sarvabhuteshu Namedvesho Stinapriya. I envy no one, nor am I partial to anyone. But if one befriends me in devotional service, he is a friend to me. I am a friend to him. This is not partial, this is natural. The Lord reciprocates with the approach of His servitors. But whether we approach Him as a devotee or as a demon, He responds in a way by a means which is for our ultimate benefit In that way, he's impartial. Although his partiality is reciprocal with our approach to him. So Shishupal, Dantavakra, Hiranyaksha, Hiranyakashipu, Kumbhakarna, and Ravana are the six archetypal demons who personify the full extent of the archetypal enemies of the soul, the collective forms of kama, krodha, lobha, moha, mada, vatsarya, lust, anger, greed, pride, illusion, and envy are personified in these six archetypal demons. And elements of these anartas exist within the hearts of all of us. And it's very reassuring and hopeful to hear and understand how the Lord redeems these demons. And as part of his eternal lila of reclaiming the conditioned souls from their sufferings caused by their own aversion to Krishna in this world, and uplifting them gradually on the path back home, back to Godhead. Today, the appearance of Lord Varaha gives precious examples about the Lord's well-wishing desire towards all of creation. In all of creation, this earth planet is especially sacred because it's the only place by which we can ascend to Goloka. It's the only place which is adorned with the town of Gokula. And blessed, the only planet which is blessed with the bare lotus footprints of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who incarnates in other planets, but only on this earth planet, in the town of Gokul, does he adorn and bless the planet with his bare lotus feet, because he's a gopa. Coward boy in Braj, and gopas don't usually wear shoes. So Gokul is the realm where it's like we use the analogy of Satvagun being like the airport by which one can board the airplane to achieve their destination. Well, Gokul is like very crude analogy of an airport, but the place where the jiva soul, the only place in all of creation where the jiva soul can actually ascend to Goloka. From other planets in the universe, one may attain Vaikuntha, or even possibly Dwarka, Mathura. But the highest abode of the purest, most intimate relationship of the individual soul with Krishna can only be achieved from the replica of Goloka on this earth, which is the blessed town of Gokul, which is like the crown upon the earth and the crest jewel on that crown being Govardhan Hill with Radhakund and Shyamakund. So Gokul in this world is a replica of Golok, but it's also the place where the sadhana bhaktas from throughout the universe interact with the nityasiddhas who Krishna brings down in his lila to train us to leave this planet to go to that earth planet wherever in the creation, whatever universe, Krishna is just performing his leela. To in that Gokul, where Krishna is at this time performing his leela, to receive our final training in this material world, and then graduate once and for all to go back home, back to Godhead. So Krishna's leela in Gokul is unique in all his avatars as demonstrating the noble occupation of man. And Srila Prabhupada, in his Gita Nagari prophecy, condensed into one verse, which is like the nutshell verse of that whole prophecy, the second half of his mission, wherein Srila Prabhupada wrote, before coming to America, that we need to have a place to demonstrate how man can live in harmony with nature, with other men, with animals, with devas, all unified on the harmonizing principle of service to Krishna. So Srila Prabhupada wanted to teach how man should live in harmony with nature based on the gifts of nature, of which the cow is very special, being the representative of the earth. And the bull or the ox is very special, being the representative of Dharma, and are like the mother and father for all humanity. When the balance, the harmony for which Krishna designed this world is disrupted by the exploitation of demons, it destroys the balance which is meant to train us and edify us for returning to the harmony of the spiritual world. When Hiranyaksha, wanting to please his brother Hiranyakashipu, was searching for a worthy adversary, this is after his massive exploits. And Srila Prabhupada explains that Hiranyaksha, being the personification of greed, plundered all the gold in the planet for his own egotistic purposes. And that plundering of the gold, all for himself, created such an imbalance in the universe that the earth plunged out of orbit and fell down to be immersed in the depths of the Garbhadak ocean. So whenever the imbalance in the universe is to such an extreme that man has no hope of his own, the Lord comes and restores the balance, as he did in his appearance as Lord Varaha, who just lifted the earth on his tusks and replaced her back in her proper orbit. Meanwhile, Hiranyaksha, wanting to, because greed can never be satisfied, it can only be purified. It can only find satisfaction in purification. But as much as one tries to satisfy his greed by acquiring more and more, it's like putting fuel in a fire and it just burns more and more consumes the soul with its burning anguish. So, Hiranyaksha, wanting to usurp not only the earth, but even the heavenly planets, found Indra's palace empty, because Indra had fled in fear of the demon. And then that demon, going to the abode of Varuna, mockingly fell at the feet of Varuna and begged him, "Please fight with me, O Lord of the waters." And Varuna was just so disgusted with his arrogance. He said, "Now I'm too old and I've retired from fighting. But your insatiable urge for conflict will be satisfied only by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And your pride and greed will be satiated only when you lie dead on the battlefield, conquered by Him, and become the food for dogs and jackals." So, enlivened by the prospects of finding a worthy combatant, he began searching through the sea. And there, Hiranyaksha met Narada, Narada Muni, and he proclaimed to him that this earth, Narada instructed him where he could find the Lord. And seeking out the Lord by following Narada's instructions, he found the Lord, Varaha, in the midst of lifting the earth. And he challenged him right then and there that this earth belongs to us, the demons. And when the Lord of Sacrifice is cut down, then all the demigods and sages will cease to exist. The whole tree of life will wither and die, and everything will belong to us, the demons. So the philosophy of nourishing the tree of existence, the tree of life, by placing water at the root of the tree, meaning offering sacrifice and devotional service to Krishna, who is the root of all existence, then our love and goodwill is distributed to all the unlimited parts and parcels, who are like the leaves and twigs and fruits and flowers on that universal tree. But when the root of the tree is cut, then the whole tree will wither and die. So this is the philosophy which inspires the devotees who want to show compassion and love to all living entities, but it can only be achieved by surrender and worship of Krishna. The demons also know the philosophy, and they want to cut that root so that the demigods will die, because without the root of the tree of life, then the tree withers and dies, and then everything falls into the hands of the demons. So when Hiranyaksha challenged Lord Varaha in a very arrogant manner, the Lord was disgusted, but he ignored him until he placed the earth back in orbit, and restoring the balance and harmony in the universe, then he took up the fight with the demon. And it was a very ferocious and tense fight, because the day was nearing its end, and the demigods who were watching were very fearful that at times the demons seemed to be getting the upper hand. And finally, Lord Brahma just prayed to Lord Varaha, "Just finish him off at once, please, because the demoniac hour of twilight is approaching, when the demons are infused with extra strength. So please, kill him before that time." And with a glance laden with love, the Lord encouraged and assured Brahma that he would fulfill his prayer. And then the demon resorted to all kinds of conjuring tricks, which was bewildering, and put the demigods in more and more anxiety, until the Lord, with his Sudarshan chakra, dispelled all the illusions and annihilated that demon. And then when the demigods came to offer their prayers to the Lord, they were astonished that the body of the demon, Hiranyaksha, was still looking not only vibrant, but effulgent. Even though he was dead, his spirit soul was gone because of the touch of the Lord's lotus feet on his body. And Lord Brahma was amazed at how blessed is the fate of this demon, that those lotus feet upon which the yogis and sages and devas meditate in mystic trance has blessed by its touch this demon's body. So This is a very relevant story for this pastime, for today's world, because Srila Prabhupada explains that the modern day demons are just like Hiranyaksha in disturbing the balance of the earth by their exploitation of what in Kali Yuga is likened to gold, being petroleum. And when petroleum, which is like the blood of Bhumi, is exploited by those who are Rakshasas, who are not happy with the gift, the natural gifts of the earth, just as they're not satisfied with the natural gifts of the cow, but to satisfy their lust, are yearning for blood. And petroleum is just like the blood of the earth. And when that blood is exploited, it creates such an imbalance on the one hand. And on the other hand, it creates a global intoxication. Because petroleum is not biodegradable as a fuel or lubricant. The Lord designed that human society would prosper and flourish, and man would be peaceful and happy and satisfied with progress in spiritual life without needing to conquer the universe, by living happily with the gifts of nature, of which the cow and the bull are the most precious. The cow takes what is most useless, grass, and grows everywhere, and transforms it to a host of precious products, like milk, which can make so many nutritious foodstuffs, and the manure, which nourishes and nurtures the earth. So the cow is such an emblem of sacrifice, taking that which is most useless, grass, and transforming it into the most precious elements of sacrifice. And like a mother is sustaining the whole planet as a microcosm of the earth herself, Bhumi, who also assumes the form of a cow. And when Bhumi was speaking, revealing her nature to Maharaj Prithu, who was so upset that when he became king and the subjects were complaining to him that they were just withering away due to starvation and malnutrition because the earth was not producing grains and her other gifts for the sustenance of man. And Prithu Maharaj understood that she was withholding her gifts, and being angry, he challenged her and was ready to kill her. And she appeared in the form of a cow and said, explained that you should never kill a cow or a Mataji. But he was so furious. You're withholding your part of the sacrifice. And she explained to him, I'm withholding because the demons have been so long exploiting my gifts for their own self-aggrandizement that I've withheld them within me. But the gifts, the seeds and herbs and roots, which were given me by Lord Brahma, have for so long been withheld that they can't again sprout new life. The seeds have become impotent and will not sprout at this point. It's been so long. So if the demigods and everyone else would just present me with a calf and a suitable milkman and a suitable bucket, I will produce milk again out of affection. So the demigods used Brihaspati as a calf, and they milked celestial substances like somaras, and all the living entities presented their appropriate representative as a calf with an appropriate container and milked whatever they desired and needed for their sustenance. And then the earth's reciprocal contribution due to her affection for her offspring was restored, just like a calf, just like a cow out of affection gives milk to the calf. And all the elements for sacrifice as well as for harmonious living in this world were returned. But in the Kali Yuga, when the global addiction to consumer goods has created a dependence on the blood of the earth in the form of petroleum to fuel and lubricate the intensified exploitation of the world, there is such an imbalance. Krishna created the cow for her gifts, like a mother, motherly gifts, and the bull as the father who would perform, who would work for the sustenance of the family in the fields, producing grains, tilling the earth, and is therefore the emblem of Dharma. But when the cow and the bull are exploited, as is the earth, as is religion, then the result is a global intoxication, because the bull is a source of power who maintains the family like a father, and like the cow, just lives on grass, and everything he produces is precious, as is that of the cow. And all the power and all the gifts given by the cow and the bull are biodegradable. They take a little bit from the earth in the form of grass and give back so much in the form of manure, which nourishes and nurtures and restores and revives the earth. But when the tractor, which Srila Prabhupada named the killer of the bull, replaces the father, and the father is unemployed, how can there be prosperity in the family? And the tractor, its byproducts are not biodegradable. Tractor runs on petroleum. When petroleum is burned and becomes hydrocarbons in the atmosphere, it's toxic to our air, our water, our soils, and our foods. And this is not more than just a disastrous health consequence, but our air, our water, our food, our sacraments. When the Christians pray, "Give us today our daily bread," they're not just referring to something to eat. They're referring to our sustenance in the form of devotional service. And water is a sacrament, is an allegory for rasa, relationships. And air, which we breathe, our very life breath, is the holy name of Krishna. But these sacraments become contaminated by the exploitation of the demons, and creates, since the Industrial Revolution, man in a short time has done more damage to this planet than man could ever restore, than man could ever heal. So where does the whole planet turn? It used to be to religion, to restore the harmony and balance. But the religions of the world today had become part of the global addiction. The addiction, the substance of abuse, is consumer goods, to which the collective society has become addicted. As a result, the whole ecosystem has become toxic, by which everyone becomes to some degree or other intoxicated just by breathing and drinking water and eating. So the condition of the planet today is much like it was when it plunged into the depths of the Garbhodak Ocean. And only the Lord could restore the planet to her proper orbit of balance. So, how does the Lord restore the balance today? All the pollution in the environment is the gross manifestation of the subtle pollution of consciousness. Because creation proceeds from subtler to grosser elements, beginning with what's in the consciousness. If lust and anger and greed, pride, illusion, envy are dominating our consciousness, then greed will predominate and the whole will suffer. So when the avatar for this age, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, was revealing to the glory, to the devotees, that he is the source of all the avatars. And he has come in this age, as he comes in every age, to give a process to restore the balance to the world. He went to the house of Murari Gupta and became immersed in a very unusual mood. The Lord began roaring, Shukara, Shukara, which means boar, boar, Murari. What? He went into Murari's temple and saw a beautiful water pot. And Lord Gauranga raised that water pot on his nose. And then he revealed before Murari the four-legged form of Varaha, whose form of a boar was extraordinarily beautiful. And from his gigantic form of Varaha, looking down upon Murari with his beautiful lotus eyes and a glance filled with compassion and love, ordered him to offer prayers. But Murari was so astounded by this form, he said, "My Lord, only you yourself knows your glories." And others can know your glories only if you yourself reveal them. Anantashesh, with his millions of hoods, holding all the universes upon one, with his other millions of mouths, is singing the glories of Lord Gauranga since time immemorial, but never reaches the end of even one day's glories of the Lord. So how can I glorify you? And then Lord Gauranga became very angry. He was venting his anger at the inauspiciousness of the study of the Veda from an impersonal perspective. And he began chastising that wretch in Kashi who dares to declare that my form is impersonal and cuts me to pieces by his explanations of Veda. My touch, which uplifts and purifies the world, he is saying is simply Maya. But now, he told Murari, I will reveal to you the essence of all wisdom. That I am the same sacrificial boar who previously appeared to lift the ocean out, the earth out of the depths of darkness in the Garbhadak Ocean. I have returned in this age to lift the earth out of the darkness of ignorance by Harinam Sankirtan. And then he explained, which also substantiates what Shukadeva Goswami is establishing in this chapter. The Lord said, when I uplifted the earth in my form as Varaha, she became pregnant by my touch and gave birth to a beautiful child named Boma, son of the earth. And I personally instructed him, Lord Varaha, the expansion of Lord Gauranga was telling Murari Gupta, I personally instructed my own son, Boma, in religious principles. And he became a very dutiful, righteous king, protecting the Vaishnavas and the gurus and the good people. But then, by association with Bana, became cruel and arrogant and began oppressing the same persons he was formerly protecting. And then I cut him down. So I will not hesitate to even cut down my own son if he becomes antagonistic to the devotees and the principles of bhakti. But I will bestow my mercy upon even a demon. Because everyone is the son and daughter of the Supreme Lord. He loves them all equally. But he reciprocates with our approach to him. Formerly, in the Satya Yuga, there was an appearance of Varaha, whose instructions were very relevant and illuminating. In Kulia, in Navadvip Dham, where today there is a temple of Lord Varaha, there was a devotee in Satya Yuga, Vasudeva, who worshipped a deity of Varaha with such devotion and such feeling, always praying to the Lord that, please appear before me, because if you do not appear before my eyes, then my life is useless. And then one day when he was worshipping his deity revealed his living form and just expanded as tall as the sky. His form of Varaha, looking down with great affection upon his servitor. And he revealed to that devotee, Vasudev, that same place where Brahma performed sacrifice to invoke my appearance to kill Hiranyaksha, that same place where I appeared to answer Lord Brahma's prayers, is present here in Navadvip Dham. Navadvip Dham, by serving the holy Dham of Navadvip, all tirthas are served. By residence in Navadvip Dham, pilgrimage to all holy places is achieved. And I will reappear here in the Kali Yuga, and you will take birth again to see my pastimes. And then Varaha disappeared. And Vasudeva was very enchanted by those words, because he was a wise pundit of Vipra. He had studied all the Vedas, but he had not seen any indication to a golden avatar to appear in the Kali Yuga. So wanting to understand his Lord's words, Vasudeva again began a systematic approach, a study of all the Vedas. And then he saw, next time, everywhere were indications that in the 28th Divya Yug, in the reign of Vaivishvatamanu, in the beginning of the Kali Yuga, the Lord would appear in a golden form, who is the avatari, the source of all the avatars, and inaugurate the process of Harinam Sankirtan, which is the essence and the compendium of all forms of service. But only the wise can see these indications. But after the disappearance of Lord Gauranga by the order of Lord Nityananda, Mayadevi removed the covering, and the world came to see the light as far as the scriptural evidences regarding the golden avatar in the age of Kali. So that place in Navadvip Dham where the Lord appeared is non-different. Oh, then Vasudeva finished his life singing the holy names of Gaur, eager for the blessed Kali Yuga to come after so many millions of years, when that old golden avatar would come singing his own name and glories, the Lord as a devotee, bestowing Harinam Sankirtan to uplift the world from the depths of darkness and restore the harmony and balance of the spiritual world by bestowing bhakti in the form of the congregational chantings of the holy name of the Lord. So that place in Navadvip Dham, non-different from Vrindavan, in essence, but there's a corresponding mellow. Vrindavan Dham, Chintamani Dham, the abode of Madhurya Ras. When the munificence of Srimati Radharani becomes prominent, then Madhurya-dham becomes Odarya, the munificent abode of the Lord Navadvipa-dham. So the place where Lord Varaha appeared in Navadvipa-dham, which is named Kol Parvat because of the appearance of the boar there to Vasudeva, is non-different from Giri Govardhan of Braj, the emblem of harmony and self-sufficiency. So Prabodhananda Saraswati, that great pundit and devotee of Lord Gauranga, has sung the glories of Lord Gauranga by comparing his gift to the world with that of the previous avatars. What benefit, this is Prabodhananda Saraswati speaking, what benefit did the world achieve when Lord Nrisimha and Lord Ram killed those Daitya and Danava demons? And what importance was it that Kapila and others came to establish the paths of Sankhya and Yoga? How glorious is it that Brahma and Shiva and Vishnu maintain, destroy, and create the material universes? How auspicious is it that Varaha lifted the earth and placed her back in orbit? In comparison, these things are not so very deeply important in comparison to the truth that Lord Gauranga has appeared in this age to reveal the unlimited splendor of pure devotional service and to bestow that gift upon the world. So let us glorify that Lord Chaitanya. So New Vrindavan is meant to be a place to demonstrate the harmony of living according to Lord Krishna's not only instructions but his own lifestyle. Krishna revealed in his own Leela how man can prosper and live in harmony. Because what is it that actually determines the harmony and sweetness to our lives? It's really a matter of relationships. Sambandha, the first cardinal truth of Vaishnava Siddhanta, means relationship with the environment. The fact is that when we're cut off from our roots, meaning the land, the earth, the cow, and the bull, we do not really understand properly the significance of Lord Krishna's arrangement. Modern technology and its propaganda tells us that we can produce so much more with a tractor. But it's all an illusion because it disrupts the harmony and balance. When I was a child, the farm where I was living, when the tractor was a flourishing dairy farm. And when the tractor came, I was just a 7-year-old child and I was chastising the farmer for allowing that thing on his farm. I told him this is the beginning of the end. But he couldn't hear it because to him it was the most glorious thing that had ever happened in his life. He finally made it and got a tractor. And then he began producing so much grains that the government started paying him more to not produce anything than he would have made in selling his grains and cows and milk. So the farm, there was a flourishing farm, and then it just became overgrown with weeds, and then was sold off to the developers. So it's just a grand illusion, the technology. Of course, in another sense, the technological revolution has assisted the propagation of Srila Prabhupada's mission. In this way, it has some merit. But devotees and aspiring devotees will only find encouragement when relationships are in balance. And the wonderful thing about plain living and high thinking, when you see that your sustenance is not the machines or the factories, but is actually the cow, representative of the earth, the bull, representative of religion, then you're, and that there are the 8,000,000 varieties of life which Krishna created all have some contribution to your own physical and emotional well-being. So in today's toxic world, when at least several species of life are becoming extinct every hour, as the whole planet is being poisoned by the byproducts of technology and consumption of petroleum, and there seems to be like a deep-seated rage and wrath within the heart of man that since the promised golden age has not descended, we will raise it up from the ashes of this world. We need to see that as Krishna told the Brijabasis, our real relationship is with the cows in Govardhan Hill. It means Krishna's way. Plain living and high thinking is the motto for Nirvindavan. When we see that our sustenance is and our health and well-being and prosperity is really based on the land and the cows and the bulls, then we'll see them with a whole different attitude, one of appreciation. And we'll see everything and everyone in Krishna's creation with an attitude of appreciation. But they all have something to offer us and something to teach us about the one who created this whole arrangement for us to go back home, back to God. So wonderful is the workings of the creation as Krishna designed it. And so horrible the ramifications of what man has done to it since the Industrial Revolution. So, on this blessed day, when Lord Varaha appeared to rescue the Earth planet from the depths of darkness in the bottom of the Garbhodak Ocean, we should appreciate how that Lord Varaha is just a portion of one plenary portion of Lord Gauranga, who appeared 500 years ago to uplift and purify the consciousness of the world by the chanting of the holy names. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare. And when Lord Gauranga was giving his darshan in Dwarka to Narada Muni, who was so concerned about the plight of the earth and the Kali Yuga, and Lord Gauranga told him that I will spread the holy name to every town and village, and in those far off lands of the Malechas and Yavanas where people try to flee my mercy, I will send my Senapati Bhakta to deliver them. That Senapati Bhakta, that commander, field commander of the devotees of the Lord, who went to rescue those who tried to flee and avoid the mercy of Lord Gauranga, is His Divine Grace, Sri Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, our Eternal Lord and Master. He has established this new Vrindavan community to teach plain living, high thinking, being satisfied with Krishna's gifts, and taking those gifts and in a joyful heart, serving and surrendering to Lord Krishna and taking the gift of Lord Gauranga to develop Braj Bhakti, the inconceivably exalted love of the inhabitants of Vrindavan, is the gift which Srila Prabhupada brought in the chanting of the holy names. So let us take shelter of his lotus feet and instructions and attain the purpose and goal and destination of life by living according to Krishna's instructions and Krishna's plan and perfecting our lives and ending our sojourn in this dark mortal world by going back home, back to Godhead. Thank you very much. Are there any questions or comments? Yes.
After becoming purified, the spirit soul will take birth and Gokula and some other planet where Lord is performing his pastimes.
Some other universe.
Some other universe. I was reading one of the Prabhupada's Prabhupada's mentioning that actually this is just when you start Krishna consciousness in this life, you won't be able to go back in one life. So this is just the beginning of our Krishna consciousness. So you were saying that we can't actually go to the spiritual world in one lifetime. Then one other devotee told me that it takes 4 lifetimes to go back.
It depends on our purities. You will not go back to the spiritual world until you're pure, because you wouldn't want the spiritual world until you're pure. You wouldn't be happy there, and nobody else would be happy to have you unless and until you are pure. But Srila Prabhupada gave us great hope that we can go back to Krishna even in this lifetime if we perfect our lives by purifying our hearts, by attentive chanting of the holy names and following the regular principles. But going back to Krishna does not mean that in one lifetime you go back to Goloka Vrindavan. We go back to Krishna in the universe where he is now displaying, revealing his Braj Lila. Because the perfection of our lives in this world at this time will elevate us to the position where we're blessed with the association of both the sadhana siddhas who are interacting with the nitya siddhas, and that'll be our final training within the material creation. But that final training in our next lifetime will be with Krishna and his nitya siddha associates and his cows, along with all the sadhana siddhas who are coming up from whatever universes and joining that entourage of eternal associates of Lord Krishna in that Gokul where he is at the time of our next life revealing his lila. And that will be the culmination of our training in the material world. But it won't exactly be the material world because it'll be with Krishna. So in one sense it's back to Godhead because it's back to Krishna. But it's not the final destination of Goloka Vrindavan. It's the final training of Gokul. So Srila Prabhupada gave us great hope and encouragement that we can perfect our existence in one lifetime if we're very serious and sincere and committed to the process he gave. But it won't be ascension to Goloka Vrindavan. Initially, it'll be Gokul, which is in one sense back to Godhead, because Krishna's there. And then when he concludes that lila and moves on, everyone goes back to Goloka. So it is possible, if we're very serious and determined and sincere, to in this one lifetime perfect our existence and go back to Krishna. It's not common, it's not cheap, it's not ordinary, but it is possible by the grace of Srila Prabhupada. Okay.
You were saying that so in this life we have to take training by the sadhana siddha and the nitya siddha.
Yeah. The advantage of that universe where Krishna is revealing his prakat lila is the interactions, the association, the interactions between the sadhana siddhas and the nitya siddhas. That's the last element in their training in this material existence. Their last training in personal service to Krishna in his Prakat Lila. That final perfection is awarded in the material universe where Krishna is revealing his Lila. It cannot be achieved in the material universe where Krishna is not performing his Lila. So it's back to Krishna. But it's not exactly the final destination as of yet. It's as good as it because it's service to the devotees in the perfected stage, which is the final perfection before the final destination. And then when that Leela is concluded, you know, Krishna personally escorts all the devotees back to Goloka. So, in one sense, that's our final homecoming. That universe where Krishna is revealing his Bhauma Leela. Because from then we just ascend to Goloka. Anything else? Yes.
Can you explain that Krishna even destroyed his own son? Promises that he would destroy his own son. He's offended to Vaishnava and he's again because of the devotion. Now, what is the fate of a person who has blessings of his ritual master, who is pure devotee? And
the blessings of the pure devotee can be lost if we do not protect it. Temporarily lost. Simply being blessed by the pure devotee is not a guarantee that those blessings will not be withdrawn if they're abused or misused. And therefore, all the pastimes, all the scriptures, all the instructions really emphasize the grave consequences of offending and obstructing the devotees. When Lord Varaha spoke about cutting down his own son, he was talking about when anyone obstructs the devotees in their progress back to Godhead. The Lord cuts them down, no matter who they are, his own beloved son. So you see how important it is to the heart of the Lord, how dearly he wants his lost parts and parcels back home. So we go on and on and on and on talking about how Krishna's impartial. But Krishna's also most renounced, and sometimes he renounces his partiality for the sake of his devotees. He renounces his partiality when someone obstructs his devotees. And he cuts that person down, whoever he may be. So the negative consequences are very dramatic. But the positive side is how we endear ourselves to the heart of the Lord by encouraging and assisting and serving the devotees. We emphasize so much on the positive side, service to the Vaishnavas. And the wonderful thing about service to the Vaishnavas is that they're so easily pleased. And what Krishna likes to see in service to the Vaishnavas is encouragement. And what's encouraging to the Vaishnavas? You know, anybody can go out and preach Krishna consciousness. It's really very simple. But how do you inspire someone who's lost hope, who's become discouraged? Why do devotees lose hope and become discouraged? It's usually because they're not feeling Krishna reciprocating in their lives, because there's something lacking in the substance and the quality of Vaishnava relationships. The Vaishnavas are the representatives of the holy name. Those Vaishnavas with whom we congregationally chant the holy name are the representatives of the Lord in our lives, where we are to serve, and in whom we will find the reciprocation from the holy name, giving us inspiration. When the relationships of the devotees is very cordial, very respectful, very gentle, very sattvic, we experience reciprocation of the holy name in those relationships, and it is so encouraging. It is so uplifting. And it is so important that we interact on the basis of this sacrament. So, service to the devotees places a large emphasis on encouragement. And it really doesn't take that much to encourage devotees. They just want to feel a little concern, a little love, which affirms Krishna's love for us. When we see that kind of sentiment coming through the devotees, it doesn't take very much. The simplest gestures of kindness are enough to make the devotees so hopeful and so satisfied. But if we withhold that, or conversely, if we give free rein to the very envy we're trying to subdue and obstruct the devotees in their hopes, in their aspirations, in their progress in spiritual life, then we can see that Krishna sometimes forfeits his impartiality and cuts down someone who tries to impede his lost servants and their hopeful quest to find their way back home, back to Godhead. It's not really partiality, it's really natural. But even being cut down by Krishna is beneficial, because it's purifying. It's not the most desirable, but it's also beneficial. There are favorable forms of devotional service and unfavorable forms of devotional service, but at some point they all kind of converge and work together, because all things work together for those who love God and are called to His purpose. Even the obstacles, it's meant to help us deepen our humility, deepen our submission to the holy name, our dependence on Krishna's mercy. Nothing is by accident, nothing's by coincidence in life. And that's another way to see how the Lord really is partial. For his devotees, he orchestrates everything in creation for their purification. You know, we say, no, Krishna's not partial, because what appears to be his partiality is simply the modes working within the framework of the time factor. And Krishna doesn't get involved with the material world, usually. But for the sake of his devotees, he does get involved, personally. He orchestrates everything. So then you can say, well, why is it, or the question regarding Shaktas, you know, those who worship Durga, they all get kinds of material blessings. But look at what the devotees get as a reward for their surrender to Krishna. He takes everything away. Yeah, he is partial. He takes everything away from the devotees. But he orchestrates everything. He sends obstacles. He sends whatever. It will help them take shelter more sincerely of his mercy. He'll send obstacles. He'll arrange them to help us become strong, to help us realize that the holy name is our only shelter. But if one gives vent to his envy by obstructing devotees, I mean, that may be useful to the devotees, but the Lord will not tolerate that kind of ego and will cut it down. That's also his mercy. But we should scrutinizingly examine, is our devotional service favorable, not unfavorable? Either will purify, but one is desirable and one's not. Anything else? Yes.
I heard in one of Prabhupada's lectures that he says that even when Krishna wants to fight, he arranges that his devotees become his enemies and then he fights with them because he doesn't want to do anything with the non-devotees.
Yeah.
So in that case, when Krishna kills his enemies, they are liberated and we understand they go back to the original position and they are in the past time for the Lord. We hear that Kamsa attained the impersonal Brahmajyoti and sort of merged in the Brahmajyoti. And what about all the demons in Krishna's pastime? Were they his eternal associates, devotees, or what's their position?
Well, all the demons were not killed personally by Krishna. Krishna considers it below his dignity to get involved with demons. So when Krishna personally, or through one of his avatars, fights with a demon, it's really a devotee who fulfills that playful desire of the Lord to fight. It's below his dignity to interact with envious entities. And as far as Kamsa attaining liberation, that was a temporary achievement, because in the larger picture, all those demons came back 500 years ago. Kamsa became the Chandakazi of Navadvip Dham. And felt such an affection toward his nephew, Sri Gauranga, that he, after his trying to impede the Sankirtan movement, and was confronted by Lord Gauranga in a very gentle, loving, friendly way. Kamsa, in the form of Chandakazi, inquired that everyone's calling you Gaurhari. I would like to address you as Gaurhari. They say that you are Krishna. Is it so? And then Lord Gauranga answered that you have just now chanted the holy names of Hari and Krishna. What to speak of Gaur? Your sins are all eradicated. And then tears just began to flow from the eyes of the Chandakazi. And in Vatsalya Bhav, he addressed his nephew and promised that not only he, but all the dynasties that would ever follow in his family would never in any way ever again impede the devotees in their chanting of the holy names. So, since Lord Gauranga is the source of all the avatars who killed all the various demons in ages past, those demons returned in Gauralila to attain devotional service as the ultimate goal of their previous forms of liberation in fighting with the Lord. And really, the archetypal demons, Hiranyaksha, Hiranyakashipu, Kumbhakarna, Ravana, Dantavaka, Shishupal, they all merged together into the body of Jagat. So all the evils and envy of all those demons was personified in one, Jagat. And his brother Madhai was worse yet. And they attain love of God by the mercy of Lord Gauranga. So in the larger picture, everything ends in bliss. Anything else? Thank you very much. Shiva Rahade Rakhi Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Gaur Prabhupada.